Good morning to you. I'm Veronica Rickert, sitting in today for Kathleen Dunn here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. With the holidays nearly behind us, the long darkness of winter looms large, so it seems like there's no better time to get away from it all, or at least plan on getting away from it all so you have something to look forward to. And this hour will help you find the perfect travel destination. Our guest is an editorial director from the travel experts at frommers.com, and they've compiled a list of the top destinations for 2008. Some of them are domestic, some international, and some just new and surprising. I hope you'll come along for the ride this hour and share your travel stories and some of your favorite destinations, whether old friends or new discoveries. We're broadcasting from Madison today, so you can reach us at a different number than usual. It's 800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Our guest this hour is David Lytle. He's editorial director at the travel publishers frommers.com. David, thanks so much for joining us this hour.
Hi, thanks for having me.
David, do you have any exciting travel plans coming up in 2008?
I need to start thinking about my own travel plans.
You've been busted. You have no travel plans.
Well, I think I'm going to Hawaii in February for a long weekend because I'm normally based out of San Francisco, so... We on the West Coast can just hop over to Hawaii, after a 4.5-hour flight and spend a few days. So we're lucky that way.
4.5 hours isn't bad.
No, not at all. It's when I was living on the East Coast, it was really easy to pop over to London or to Paris for a long weekend as well.
So obviously, Hawaii is a tried and true destination. You have some more unusual ones on your top destinations list for 2008. Tell me about the list and how you came up with what's on it.
Sure. Every year, we compile information. We're always on the lookout, for what's new, where trends are going, how people are traveling. And every year, we get input from our authors as they update our guidebooks, from the editors who work with them, and from our readers and our listeners, because we podcast, we publish online, we publish travel guides. And we get all this information together, and then there's a core group of editors who meet, and, we start with a very long list, and we argue for and against until we come up, typically with a list between 10 and 15 destinations.
Well, your list is, it says it's in no particular order, but I can't help but noticing that the first place on your list is Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, which doesn't sound like an obvious one. Tell us why Pittsburgh is right there at the top.
Sure, absolutely. We try and hit two different markets, in a sense. We know that our core readership for Frommers are American leisure travelers. And as we grow globally, we also try and hit these other markets for, what we would consider in the United States to be international travelers. So we want to highlight some spots in the United States for them to come to. We also want American travelers to reconsider some destinations, and Pittsburgh falls under this category. It's a fantastic, traditional American city. It's celebrating its 250th birthday next year, and that alone is a reason why people should, give it a chance. Take a look at it. It's a city that has gone through a renaissance of its own. After the steel industry collapsed in the 80s, you saw this, the steel belt became the rust belt.
Mm-hmm.
And these towns really struggled to sort of, just to survive. And they've gone through a renaissance where they now have a world-class symphony orchestra. They've always had, great sports teams. And, it's the convergence of three rivers, and there's a lot of outdoor activities that you can do while you're there. You can get high culture with the ballet and the symphony. You can, get out of the city, and it's beautiful, scenery nearby. You've got all these Frank Lloyd Wright houses that are within about an hour and a half driving, so you can also use it as a base to get out and explore, an American architectural icon.
Well, I think it seems like a worthwhile thing to get to know America in terms of the places you might not have hit. I mean, I've certainly never been to Pittsburgh, but I've been to New York and Los Angeles.
Right. And, that's part of the point of the list, too, is that we don't need to tell people to consider a trip to New York or to Los Angeles or Chicago or Paris or Rome or London. It's funny, every year we publish this list, we always get some really blowback from readers who are like, why is this town on there? Why would I want to go there instead of going to New York? And it's like, well, I don't need to tell you to go to New York. You're already considering it.
But are they going to have as good a time in Pittsburgh as they're going to have in New York?
It matters what you're interested in. And, it's never fair to compare one place to another because it's always apples to oranges. Each of these destinations have their own unique qualities that make them worth investigating. And what we like to, the philosophy that we espouse is that people should always have an open mind when they travel. You should go with, it's nice to have a plan, but you should always be, open to new ideas and experience, and you should be able to try and live like the locals in any destination to get an understanding for that place. And we think that actually makes the world a better place when you try and understand a destination in that way. So, if you're from the American South, why not go to, Pittsburgh and stay for, a long weekend or a week and, meet locals, and you start understanding how the country operates. Every, region has its own philosophy of life.
Well, this isn't on your list, but recently I had a couple of friends move to St. Louis, and I was surprised how much I liked St. Louis. I sort
there
of assumed
go.
That it was, having struggles with poverty and that the interior was decaying, but I thought it was incredibly charming, the architecture, the arch, the restaurants, and I was surprised. So I can see why Pittsburgh could be another one of those surprise cities.
Exactly. I grew up in the Midwest. My childhood vacations were all based upon piling into the station wagon, driving to a nearby Midwestern city. I grew up in northern Indiana. So we would hit Cincinnati, Louisville, St. Louis, Pittsburgh, Chicago, St. Paul, and we would go for doubleheader baseball games. So we would go to see two baseball games, and then we would also hit museums and, go to a park and stay in a Holiday Inn.
Yeah, the quintessential family road trip.
And that's how most Americans still travel. Most vacations are within 3 to 4 hours of their home by car.
So what about people who want to go a little farther afield? Do you have a favorite on the list that is outside the U.S.?
I never have a personal favorite. My favorite, my stock answer for that, my favorite is always the next place that I'm going, because I'm always curious.
Right.
Places that I've been recently that are on the list, San Lucia, I was just there in August, beautiful Caribbean island, it's volcanic, but extinct, so you have these great mountainous peaks that, they're called the Pitons, they're iconic for San Lucia, and there are two extinct volcanoes that are right next to each other, and they're just covered in lush tropical vegetation, and they're really dramatic. You can go hiking through a rainforest here, you can... it's got some of the best snorkeling in the Caribbean. They've made an effort to create marine reserves because years ago they realized that their fish stocks were being depleted. And so what they did, much to the consternation initially with the fishermen, they decided that certain reefs were going to be protected. And these turned into fish hatcheries. And so you can't fish there, but then when the fish leave their hatchery, the fishermen learned after a couple of years that it was actually great to have some of these reefs protected because the fish population increased. So you can go snorkeling over these gorgeous reefs. I spent about 2 hours just over one in particular just floating, and watching flounders try and camouflage themselves against rock and trying to count how many different species of fish that I could see. I ran out. It's impossible to keep track after a while. But it's just a really fantastic destination.
And how do you get there?
Luckily, what's happening in the Caribbean, these direct routes are starting to open up. It used to be you had to do lots of connections. You had to, get to Miami. You had to get to San Juan and then, switch again. And so you got all these little bottlenecks. And at least on the East Coast, these direct routes are opening up out of JFK. So you can fly, I think, America, Delta, and United now all have direct routes to San Lucia, and,
oh, wow.
Which also lowers the price. It takes these flights into Huanora Airport, which is on the southern end of the island, and it just cuts down your time. As opposed to having to switch planes and have a 12-hour travel day, you can have, a 5-hour travel day and be there.
Wow, that's pretty significant.
And have a drink in your hand, by the time the sun sets.
That's one of those perfect winter getaways.
Absolutely. Prices get a little higher in the winter, but, you're paying for paradise in this sense. They have rooms on San Lucia that are, upwards of $2,500 a night. They also have rooms that you can stay in that are $79 a night. And, beautiful, simple rooms that have, your fourth wall is open to nature, looks out over, a protected bay. I believe that resort is called Tikai, which is T-I-K-A-Y-E. you know, that's their low rate. And then, you know, you can go up in price from there. So it really is open to anybody who wants to get there. You don't have to be wealthy to hit this destination.
Do you have a sense of what Americans are looking for as far as travel lately, what the temperature is, whether they're looking for domestic things that are more road trippable, or are they looking for exotic places that are off the beaten track?
You know, there's never one profile you can give to the diverse population that, you know, Americans are comprised of. What we are seeing is that they're traveling differently. They're not taking necessarily longer trips. They're taking shorter trips that are organized by itineraries. And we've actually started publishing guidebooks to hit these travelers, and they're doing really well. They're called the Day by Day series, and they lay out plans for popular destinations. So if you have one day, you know, we'll give you a minute-by-minute account of how you can organize your day. You know, you can have a map in your back pocket, you can sort of have a checklist, and, you know, you can take a walking tour through San Francisco, or, you know, we'll give you, if you have a little longer time, we have some itinerary-based products that, you know, give you road trip information. And we're finding that people have less vacation time, or they use less vacation time than what they're even provided. So they turn weekends into long weekends and take a couple of vacation days on either side of that weekend so they can fly on a Thursday night, return on a Monday.
And speaking of one that might be a little bit closer, there's one that appealed to me on the list, Broad Door Lakes of Nova Scotia.
Yes, absolutely. This one I actually am excited about and want to get up there. Our Canadian editor was just raving about this. It's on Cape Breton. It is an interior sea, basically. It's a mix of salt and fresh water because it has rivers coming down into it, and then it also gets the ocean coming into it. And in the spring, summer, and fall, it's a perfect destination. There's a very popular drive on the south shore, and if you just go inward, inland a little bit, here you come to Broad Door Lake, and it's quiet. There are a few small towns along the lake that were founded by Scottish immigrants, and they still have that flavor. They still have, you know, a traditional Scottish pub where people gather and they play, you know, Celtic music. And you can go and experience this. The best way, you know, to get there would be to fly into Halifax and then rent a car. But you can go onto a site like Vrbo.com, V-R-B-O.com, and you can find houses to rent.
Oh, cool.
You know, so you can take your time. It's a pretty big lake. You know, I don't know off the top of my head how long it takes to drive around the whole thing, but the majority of it is undeveloped. There are colonies of bald eagles. It's a very popular spot for birders, which is sort of it's a secret subculture of travelers, are these people who go to destinations. You know, they have a checklist, a lifelong checklist of what species they've seen. And so Broad Door Lake should really be on their radar because it's in, you know, the major migratory path for North America.
So it's one lake we're talking about.
Yes.
An inland lake.
Yes.
Well, that sounds lovely. Certainly something to try coming up.
I hope
you'll share your travel plans with us and maybe get some advice from our guest this hour, David Lytle. He is editorial director at Fromers.com. And, of course, he's a great guy to ask if you have any questions about where you want to go, maybe family-friendly destinations. And we'll talk more about the list of Fromers, their travel top destinations for 2008. Hope you'll call in and tell us where you've enjoyed traveling yourself at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. I'm Veronica Rickard in today for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up after 11 o'clock, Jim Packard is in for Larry Mueller this hour. He'll get the latest on Apple and Macintosh computers and accessories. Jim's guest at 11 is professional Mac support specialist Joe Rhodes of Madison. Veronica Rickards back with you, sitting in this week for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network. And we're talking with David Lytle, editorial director at Fromers.com. He is talking about the list they have compiled of top destinations for 2008. But we can also branch out a little and talk about where you'd like to go and where you've been. You can recommend one of your favorite places or get some recommendations yourself. The number is 1-800-642-1234. And we'll go to the phones now. Here's a call from Eugene in Viola. Hi, Eugene. Go ahead.
Good morning, Veronica. So your guest, I don't know if your guest may not be familiar. In southern Wisconsin, I'm calling from the little village of Viola, about 6 miles, 7-8 miles north of us here. There's 8,500 acres. That's the Kickapoo Valley Reserve. And from Viola to Ontario, Wisconsin, when I was a child growing up here, it's 18 miles, and you cross the Kickapoo River. There were 15 bridges on that river. And it's the 5th or 6th of January, they're doing a Winterfest with cross-country skiing, tobogganing, and sleigh riding.
So this is the Kickapoo Valley?
The Kickapoo Valley Reserve at Lafarge, just above Lafarge. Then, during the summer months here, you've got the different festivals. You've got several Civil War encampments. And the biggest one, I think, is down at Boscobel in the first weekend in August. They have between 800 and 1,000 reenactors for that one.
Oh, wow. It's an active area.
Yes, it is. But during the summer, you can canoe that river up there from Ontario down as far. Generally, the prettiest part of it, I think, is from Ontario probably down to Lafarge. It's just plain gorgeous in the summertime. It's also pretty reasonable for camping.
Eugene, is the Kickapoo the river that you can tube down as well?
Yes, you can.
I thought so. I've always wanted to do that. It sounds fun. Well, thanks for the call, Eugene. And David Lytle, I don't know if you write much about Wisconsin destinations. Are you familiar with the Kickapoo Valley Reserve?
I've heard of it. I'm not personally familiar with it. Again, we love to learn about places that other people are excited about. You know, there's an entire world out there, and you can't, you know, get it all down in one list, you know, at the end of every year. And to learn about something like this is fantastic, you know, especially something like a Winterfest where, you know, you can probably go and snowshoe until, you know, you're ready to end the day. Sounds great to me.
Thanks a lot for the call, Eugene. And we'll take one from Tom in Wausau. Welcome, Tom. Go ahead.
Good morning. I'm just looking for something with the passport mess going on. I don't want to go to Caribbean or overseas, but I'm looking for somewhere domestic, warm, that's not too touristy this in the next month or two. Or if you had any suggestions for me.
All right. Thanks, Tom.
So you're asking for the impossible, right?
Yeah.
In the wintertime, you want to go someplace warm, not touristy. That's domestic, you know, and that sort of limits where you can go in the United States, but you can consider something like Grand Canyon National Park. It'll be cooler. It won't be, you know, blazing hot, but the national parks overall are almost ignored in the wintertime. People think of them as summer destinations. So you can look, you know, in the American Southwest, it's a great place to go to. You can also look along the Gulf Shore in Alabama. That's all been rebuilt for the most part since Katrina hit. We also have New Orleans down as a destination for 2008 because there was a survey that came out recently where more than half of the respondents to this survey still thought New Orleans was underwater.
Oh, you're kidding.
Right. So their numbers are growing slowly, but we're really encouraging people to get down there. The restaurants are open again. The major tourist areas were never underwater. And so, you know, you have the Garden District and you have the French Quarter that, you know, the, you know, sort of iconic areas that people think of when they think of New Orleans. And the town is really, really hungry for tourism dollars to get back there to, you know, keep it around, or it may just vanish.
My husband went to New Orleans on business. I think it was just the year after the hurricane, and he said it was great.
Yeah, absolutely.
He did. He talked about meeting people there who were troubled by what had happened, and there were some funny T-shirts, which I can't quote on the air. But that sort of seems like part of the cultural richness of going to New Orleans right now.
Yeah, you know, New Orleans, as they will say down there, you know, definitely has its ribald side, but it also has, you know, fantastic jazz musicians. You know, that alone, you know, it's a pure style of American music, and just to go down there alone and listen to a New Orleans band play into the wee hours of the morning is a fantastic experience, and it's very uplifting.
So you're still going to find the bands and the tourist infrastructure?
Yes, absolutely. They just open up the rest of the Charles Street the trolley, so That alone gets people across town like they couldn't before. They had to rebuild some of that because parts of that line did get underwater from the flooding. So it's back. People just need to go there.
It sounds like a pretty compelling place to go right now. Is it, as far as value for your money, are you finding better deals because they are a little more challenged?
Yes, you absolutely can. A couple weeks ago, I was just doing some research on New Orleans for hotel rooms and for packages. And packages are always a great way to go. It's an industry term, but a package is a combination of different travel products. Usually it is something like airfare and hotel. And I believe it was through Northwest Airlines Vacation Arm that you could get air and hotel for like 3 nights, and it was under $400 flying out of Chicago.
Mm.
You know, your price, your base rate's going to change depending upon where you fly out of. One hotel had a package, actually, that they gave you a reduced rate for a day of volunteering to help rebuild neighborhoods in the city, which volunteering and traveling are a great combination. We're seeing a growing trend in this. It's always existed, but it's coming into people's consciousness more and more, you know, not just going to New Orleans, but to go to, you know, national parks or to state parks in the country and help rebuild trails. You can go to, you know, various points across South America and help, you know, build irrigation ditches or schools, or, you know, you can work on a farm in Italy, you know, and in exchange for that, you can get, you know, free room and board.
Well, back to the phones now. Here's a call from Chris in Minnesota. Hi, Chris, go ahead.
Hey, I was calling. I actually live in Northwest Florida right now, and all the things you've been saying about the Gulf Shores and New Orleans, that's all really good information. I agree with it. It's a great place to go. I'm calling because I'm wondering if you had any good locations in that area within probably about 500-600 miles. I travel a lot on the weekends, and I have a great opportunity to do that. I was wondering if you had any good outdoor locations. You mentioned state parks. Any other places that maybe I hadn't seen that have a lot of outdoor activities for the during the winter time that aren't probably too cold?
David Lytle?
Great question. Well, you're in the Panhandle is what I'm guessing from being in Northwest Florida, which that alone is a great sort of undiscovered part of Florida. Everybody goes down, you know, they get to the center to go to Orlando, or they go to the coast, hit Miami, or go to the Keys, and the Panhandle is sort of underserved. So that alone, you're in a great area to explore along the Gulf Shores. You know, I normally would be able to pull up destinations really quickly. I'm actually in a building right now where we have a power outage, so I can't give you any names off the top of my head, but what I can tell you to do is to go to our website, defromers.com, and we publish over 3,500 destination profiles on the site. You can go, click through to a map, and you're going to find a lot, you know, just within your area. You know, you could consider like a road trip to Birmingham even just to, you know, immerse yourself in the civil rights history of America. I'm a big fan of traveling for education.
Okay, well, thanks for that call, Chris. Hope you find what you're looking for on line, and we'll take a call from Judy in Milwaukee. Hi, Judy, go ahead.
Hello. I, too, just returned from a month in New Zealand. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I spent a month in New Zealand. I love New Zealand.
I love New Zealand. And Wellington is just wonderful. The last time I'd been there, I just skipped through Wellington because it wasn't particularly attractive. But now it's wonderful. It's got a whole harborside wharf area with sculpture all over, and it's the most delightful city. But I have a question for you.
Sure.
I use Fromers a good deal, and for the first time, I stayed at a place that you recommend highly that was terrible. And
oh,
I wondered,
I'm sorry.
No, I mean, it's not your fault, and I made well of it anyway, but is there a way we report to you if we have a place that really needs to be reconsidered?
Absolutely. Currently, what you can do is on the bottom of every page on Fromers.com, there is a contact us link, and that takes you to, you know, a form that basically you fill out what, you know, the nature of your message, and then it gets directed to the right people.
Right.
And in that case, it would go into the book editor that would go to the author. Was this in the New Zealand Guide?
It was, and it was Great Barrier Island, which desperately needs tourism, and everybody knew this place had deteriorated on the island and was simply terrified that people would just stop coming back to the island because
right.
of that.
Right. Well, I personally know the author. I had dinner with her when we were there in New Zealand, and she's fantastic.
Yeah.
And she is updating that book constantly, and we can make that change online to our review as well. So when we hear back from a reader and we get confirmation from the author, we change that information online because we publish all of our guidebooks online, and we never want to steer anybody wrong, but it's the nature of travel writing and travel review is that, you know, as soon as you get it in print, something has changed.
So I must say it was more fun almost because when I said where I was staying, the local people would sort of roll their eyes and I became their new best friend because they wanted to protect me.
you got the sympathy vote.
I got the sympathy vote. But anyway, I recommend New Zealand highly and I think it needs to be for at least a month.
Absolutely. Did you go to the National History Museum in Wellington?
Te Papa.
Te Papa.
Yeah, Te Papa.
And I'd go back every day because I stayed for 5 days, so I would go back for 2 hours and do a different part every day.
Yeah, absolutely. That longhouse that they have built in the middle of that, I sat in there for a very long time.
Me too. And yeah. The fine art. The New Zealand artwork has become spectacular. It's not just derivative, it's interpretive now. It's beautiful.
Absolutely, and the winemaking from New Zealand.
Yes, yes, I drank more wine. And the place you recommended is the best bed and breakfast on Waiheke, Te Whau.
Oh, yeah.
Best place
I stayed
I ever
there.
Stayed at in my life.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely, and the host.
Jean it's not Sally, because Sally's great Ponsonby. It's Jean and Liz.
Yes, Jean and Liz are fantastic, and they tell some great stories around dinner. Did Jean make dinner for you?
Every night, except for two nights when I was the only person. So we would go get fish and chips at the Maori place and go down to the beach and sit and watch the sunset.
Oh, it sounds like you had a wonderful vacation, and I'm glad that our guidebook could help you.
It helps enormously, but I just... I loved Great Barrier Island, and it would be a shame if people stopped going back because they stayed at a place that was run by a drunk.
yeah, that's. I'll let our guidebook author know. You know, you can just send an email directly to editor@fromers.com, and that will come to me.
Well, I have to say, I'm jealous of the two of you getting to spend a month there. My husband and I just came back from New Zealand. We had only 2 weeks, and it was not enough.
Oh, a month isn't enough.
Yeah, I can imagine that a year might not even be enough.
Yeah.
We had friends who were staying there for a year, but I have to second what Judy said about Wellington. I think we were there about 8 hours before my husband was looking up how easy we could move there, and it wasn't quite as easy as we'd hoped.
That was a... part of our trip, too. We started looking at prices on property. You know, maybe we could buy a house here and rent it part of the year. And
it's just spectacular.
And the people are understated, doesn't even go far enough to describe them. It took us about a week to realize where the sense of humor lied, that it really was buttoned down and understated and really, really pleasant people.
And more English than I would have thought, too.
More
British, the sort of reserve and the conversational style.
Right, they consider Australians to be their wild cousins.
I think that's probably true. I have to say, we went with my 2-year-old son, and it was both a great idea and a bad idea because New Zealand is a wonderful place for children, but flying there was maybe the longest night of my life. It didn't help that my son had stomach flu.
Oh.
But what do you think about places for children?
I think children are immediately adaptable to travel. I took a trip to Italy with a group of friends, and we rented, we stayed in Rome a few days. Each of us rented different apartments, and then we rented a villa in Tuscany, which was actually really cheap. And my friends, Paula and Gavin, brought their, I think she was 8 months old at that time, their 8-month-old daughter.
Oh, wow.
And she was fantastic to travel with. You know, we took turns, you know, pushing the stroller or, you know, carrying her around, you know, the square in Siena and went, you know, to thermal baths and, you know, she loved that. And it was, you know, one of the things we actually did in Siena was we went into a hardware store and bought an inflatable pool. We took it back inflated it, filled it with water on the lawn in front of the villa, and we sat in the sun with her for an afternoon and looked at the hills of Tuscany while she played in a pool.
Sounds like a pretty great way to spend the afternoon.
Because, you know, yeah, exactly. You know, part of a vacation, part of traveling, isn't always being on the go. It should be relaxing, and it's always a good idea to set aside blocks of time that are not for, you know, checking things off your list. Maybe it's just taking a leisurely stroll. Maybe it's sitting in the sun, you know, for a while and just watching the world go by.
It's a good way to go. That's one thing we learned on our New Zealand trip, was that there's such a thing as too much travel, just in terms of getting in the car and hiking off to the next destination.
So. Yeah, absolutely. We publish a book called 500 Places to Take Your Kids Before They Grow Up, which we'll be putting online in a couple of months. And we look at them across all sorts of different categories, you know, just like great cities. Like New York City is a great city to take kids because, you know, it's got fantastic museums. You can take a free ferry ride. There's lots of green space, Central Park, smaller parks included. But we also, you know, look at things like where to find fossils, you know, where to learn about history, where to get great views. And it covers the entire world, you know, so you can think about what is my kid into and then where can I travel that, you know, you can build a vacation around your children's interests.
This is like a great resource for parents. So that's 500 places to take your kids before they grow up.
That's right.
Okay, let's go back to the phones.
Sure.
Here's a call from Anna in Madison. Welcome, Anna. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you.
Hi.
First of all, I'm a huge Vrbo fan. I started using that site about 4 or 5 years ago, and it's revolutionized my travel experience.
Awesome.
Especially because it's a great way to travel with young children because you don't have to eat out all the time. You can cook your own food and you can do laundry, and it's really nice. I did just buy my Fremmer's Guide to South Florida, and we are going to Fort Lauderdale.
Okay.
I am vehemently anti-theme park. And I have a 3-year-old and a 6-year-old. And I guess I'd like some advice about offbeat, fun kid places in Fort Lauderdale, and I'm also thinking about going to the Everglades, and I'd like some advice about that.
Off the top of my head, Everglades is an awesome place to go through, and it's one of those places that people really should go to now. We're always really concerned with, and especially Florida's notorious for this, for overdevelopment. They keep eating into the Everglades. You know, mm-hmm. It's supposed to be a protected area, yet people keep finding ways around that and, you know, draining it, and it's losing its natural, environment. So the Everglades is great. You can do tours. How old is your child?
We have a 3-year-old and a 6-year-old.
3-year-old
so
and a 6-year-old.
Traveling.
And Fort Lauderdale, you know, is also, it's no longer the number one spring break place. It's sort of grown up. That crowd tends to move around after a few years. You know, they're going somewhere else. So you're not going to find necessarily these college crowds and high school crowds of, like, partying kids. So it should be a quieter experience for you just on the beach alone. I would also recommend looking at smaller museums that are in Fort Lauderdale. Off the top of my head, I can't remember the name of them, but I know they have a natural history museum, I thought, there. And all along the coast, I mean, you can just do little drives, and it's town after town after town. Mm-hmm. You could do a day trip, you know, even down to Miami just to, you know, explore that area so that you can compare and contrast the difference between Miami and Fort Lauderdale.
Is there a way to tour in the Everglades, you know, kind of like a non-commercial way? Does the park down there, to your knowledge, do you know if the it is a national park, right?
Yes.
Do you know if that provides tours?
Any national park what they do is they will have vendors that they've contracted. So they will the only way to tour it is going to be through somebody who is licensed by the park. So I don't know where you draw the line on what is commercial. There's a possibility if you want to pay more that you could hire a private guide that may take, you know, just your family out in, you know, one of the hover boats.
Oh, that sounds like fun.
And to find information about that, you can just go to nps.gov. That's the National Park Service website. And each park has its own profile online, and they should list all accommodations, dining, if that exists in any particular park, and tours. All the national parks have educational classes that are geared towards different ages. Like, I know you can go out in, like, Yosemite, and you can take a guided tour, and they only take, like, 8 people at a time on a tour, and they go wolf spotting.
Wow.
So, you know, each park is going to have its own flavor for its tour. You know, maybe you're going to go gator spotting, or, you know, maybe you're going to look for a manatee if they work their way in there, or, you know, identify a certain number of species. Be great for a 6-year-old. I don't know if a 3-year-old is going to retain all of that, but, you know, doesn't hurt.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for that call. And we're going to take a quick break now, and then we'll come back to the phones. We're talking with David Lytle. He's editorial director at Fromers.com, and we're talking about top travel destinations for 2008, also giving you advice about where to go in the upcoming year. And you're giving us advice, too, telling us where you've discovered and had a great travel experience. So we've got a couple open lines now, so why don't you give us a call and join the conversation at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. I'm Veronica Rickert, in today for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. After 11:45, Jim Packer discusses Wisconsin rail safety issues. His guest is State Commissioner of Railroads, Rodney Cronin. Veronica Rickert, sitting in this hour for Kathleen Dunn here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking travel this hour, finding out where to go and what to do with editorial director of Fromers.com. His name is David Lytle. And David Lytle, we have Greg in Leopolis waiting to talk to you. Hi, Greg. Go ahead.
Hi. I've got a couple quick questions here.
Sure.
We're getting married on Saturday, and Sunday we're flying down to Phoenix for a honeymoon. And we're going to be staying in the Scottsdale area, and we'll be there until Friday. And just any suggestions, any places that we should try and hit and see, and then also information just for New Year's activities. I've actually have a hard time finding out what's going on. You know, I've been online, and the sites there are really vague as to what to do on New Year's Eve. So. Any ideas?
Yeah, we'll take that in reverse. First, let me say congratulations on getting married. That's awesome. Phoenix is a great town for the wintertime. You know, back to an earlier caller, it is a place that you should go in the wintertime because, you know, you're going to get out of the cold. New Year's Eve, you know, I would say your best bet is going to be going to the local newspaper online. They now all list events that are happening. Also on Fromers.com, one of our publishing partners is a company called What's on When that does global listings. And you can find all of that information on our Phoenix page, which is Fromers.com/destinations/Phoenix. And just click on events, and it will you can pull up what's happening by day. Now, things to do in and around Phoenix. Phoenix alone is just a great restaurant town. In the wintertime, they have a restaurant week. This is something that's becoming really popular in cities across the country. I think it originally started in New York, but typically it's a way for you to get into some of the higher-end restaurants. You'll need a reservation, but the pricing is capped, and it's usually like it's the year. So your price for a meal is going to be appetizer, a drink, you know, your entree and dessert is going to be $20.08. Certain restaurants participate in that, and the Phoenix Republic, I think, or the Arizona Republic is the newspaper you should look at to get information for what's happening locally. And then you can go to also our site, which will have all sorts of things that are going on. There are some great Western museums there. There's the Phoenix Art Museum is fantastic. There's the Mesa Southwest Museum. I think there's also a railroad museum there and a Wells Fargo museum.
Hope that helps you out, Greg, and congratulations on your pending wedding. Good luck there in the Phoenix area. And David Lytle, I have a question for you that
sure.
I was going to ask from a Wisconsin Public Radio staffer who shall remain nameless. What if you want to travel, but you're not really into the whole, like, switching planes, you have a kid, and you want it to be sort of safe and not too much of a hassle? And I think she's thinking more of a, I don't think she's thinking of a domestic. Maybe you could give one domestic and one international.
Depending upon what your closest airport is, it's always tricky. If you're in the Midwest, we are often cursed with not having an airport that will fly direct to international destinations. You know, you have to fly through Chicago or right. Philadelphia or D.C. or Boston or New York if you're going to Europe.
So
or,
we're probably
know.
Talking O'Hare here.
Yeah, so you'll probably have to fly to O'Hare. But from Chicago, you know, European cities are really fantastic. And you can connect to multiple cities by riding the train, which is a way that you don't have to drive. You know, once you're on the train, you can have your own car. You can have your child in the car with you. You know, and I'm fascinated by sitting on a train and just watching the countryside go by.
Yeah, that sounds like a romantic way to go. So you'd say a European city. Do you have one in particular?
Oh, any of them. But, I mean, I would start with London. Or I would, and you know, you can do a day trip to Paris even by taking the tunnel. It's that easy now. Mm. I think the train takes less than 3 hours.
That's pretty fast.
Yeah. Another thing that is very popular with Americans is cruising. Everything, you know, it's self-contained vacation. You just have to get to the port, and you don't have to go on mega ships. There are smaller ships. You know, it can be a very affordable way for families to travel. I've never personally gone on a cruise. When I get on the water, I go with a group of friends and we rent a sailboat. So I'm just with the people that I want to be with, and we can set our own course.
Right.
You know, of course, you have to have friends who know how to sail.
Right, that's key.
My contribution is cooking, so you know, I give something back to the boat. But you can also take, you know, smaller. There are smaller lines that, you know, are family oriented, and you know, you can take a long weekend. You can do, you know, a 10-day itinerary. These boats all accommodate families. You know, they have kids programs. You know, you can drop your kid off at daycare, and they'll have activities for the kids to do, while you maybe can just get a little time to yourself as well.
That sounds pretty nice.
Yeah.
And I have to say, someone else here on staff told me that everyone in Wisconsin, as they see it, wants to either go to New Zealand or Costa Rica. We've talked about New Zealand. Is Costa Rica still a place to go?
Yeah, Costa Rica will always be a place to go. Interesting fact about Costa Rica, it doesn't have a standing army. All of the taxation that in other countries would go towards, you know, funding a military, Costa Rica has put into preserving and reclaiming its natural state. So it's a fantastic place to go for families. There are all of these eco resorts. You can stay in what are called cloud lodges because they're high enough up in the mountains that you're actually in the cloud line at certain times of the day. You're going to see all sorts of nature. There are, for older kids, there are surf camps that you can go to all along the coast. English is spoken fairly widely across the country. You can go to places that are developed on the coastline, you know, and like an all-inclusive and just stay there. Or you can be more adventurous and hire guides and, you know, go by, you know, like a Jeep tour inland and, you know, get to the rainforest and see monkeys.
How long does it take from, say, O'Hare?
To Costa Rica, you're probably going to have to switch planes in Texas, although there might be a direct flight. You're probably looking at a day of travel. I would think it's going to be 6 to 8 hours to get down there.
Oh, it's not too bad.
Well, if it was a direct flight, it would be faster.
I see. I told my husband that after New Zealand, nothing will ever seem bad again. So
right.
That
well,
was four planes.
In Central America, all these other countries are trying to be the next Costa Rica.
Hmm.
Panama's emerging as a new eco-friendly travel destination. Nicaragua is getting into the game because, you know, they've been stable for a while now after the Civil War. Honduras is emerging. Belize is, you know, very, it's practically a U.S. state. You know, it's on the American dollar.
Oh, that's interesting. We have a caller, by the way. I don't know if the caller who was calling about the Everglades, I don't remember her name. I'm sorry.
Anna?
Anna, very good. She had we had someone else call up and say that she had recent information on the Everglades. Apparently she had gone there recently and would leave her phone number if Anna wanted to call her and get some further information on the Everglades. So
oh, great.
That's a nice offer from one of our callers. And we'll go back to the phones. Here's a call from Kevin in Tomahawk. Welcome, Kevin. Go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning.
Hi.
We want to return to Yellowstone. We've been there about 10 years ago in the summer, and I'd never do that again. But we're looking at October, and I was wondering if you can recommend any off-the-beaten tour pass, guided or unguided?
the fall is an awesome time to go to national parks to begin with, because as you said, you went in the summer and you would never do it again, and that's because that's when everybody goes, and it's a horrible way to see national parks because what you're seeing are other people as opposed to the park. The best thing to do is to go to, as I said to Anna earlier about the Everglades, go to nps.gov. That's nationalparkservice.gov. And they will give you all the information that you can get for trails, for camping, for, you know, what's open at what time of year, because, you know, they may be starting closing some of the roads in the fall if there, you know, there's snow up high. So that's going to be your best bet. And then we also publish individual guides for the major national parks. You can just go to a bookstore or online, go to like Amazon or Farmers.com and pick up a copy of our guidebook.
Thank you very much.
Sure, no problem.
All right, thanks for the call. And let's take now from Jim in Madison. Welcome, Jim. You're on the air.
Good morning. I do want to highly recommend Costa Rica that you just talked about. Being able to go ahead and get a guidebook, either for one person or two people, individual women traveling around, is a very comfortable country. Just some very basic Spanish, and you can go ahead and get to the outer areas very easily. And it's just so much fun being able to go ahead and connect with the travelers and the youth hostels and connect up. My question has to do with just what's the best way of finding the most inexpensive airlines when you do have a flexible schedule? Orbitz, Travelocity, Kayak, what do you recommend?
My favorite is Kayak. I tend not to look at Orbitz, Travelocity, or Expedia anymore. I look at Kayak. I think it is a great aggregator. It pulls in sites from wherever. And then you need to still look at Southwest. If you're flying domestically, you have to look at Southwest's site independently because no other site picks up Southwest flights. JetBlue is starting to appear on other sites as well. So Kayak is a good start. I would also look at Mobissimo, which is a...
How do you spell that?
Mobissimo. M-O-B-I-S-S-I-M-O.
Mobissimo.
Yeah, .com.
All right, thank you very much.
Yeah, it's great.
All right, thanks a lot for the call, Jim. And listening to you talking about websites reminds me, you've referenced Vrbo, I think it was, a couple of times. What is that?
Vrbo stands for Vacation Rental by Owner.
Ah.
So it's V-R-B-O. And people who have extra properties or, you know, they're going to be gone for a while, they have listings, and it covers the world. There are several other sites that do this, but I think Vrbo is the biggest at this point, and it's very reliable. You know, they long-time renters post photographs. People can, you know, write reviews on the properties, you know, how they found it, if it was of quality or not. All of my friends have used it at one point or another. We use it in San Francisco to find houses in Lake Tahoe for the weekend. You know, you're like, oh, what's available? And you can go on and find a place, and you can pay online with PayPal, and it's all taken care of. And you get there, and there are, you know, instructions for, you know, how to use the stove or whatever. Everybody typically treats their house like a hotel at that point. You can also do house swaps, which are really fantastic. Depending upon where you live and where you want to go, you can do these home exchanges. The largest one, I think, is called homeexchange.com. And that way you're not even paying rent. You are literally moving into someone's house when they're moving into your house for a period of time.
Oh, interesting. Didn't know about that one, homeexchange.com.
Yeah. Take some coordination, but, you know, it's doable.
Okay, we have time for one more call. Here is Marianne in Madison. Hi, Marianne. Go ahead.
Thank you. I would like to add to the woman's exploration of Florida, the out-of-the-way places that
mm-hmm.
she's looking for,
sure.
and anybody else, Highlands Hummock State Park. It's just outside of Sebring, and you go down the Central Highway in Florida, and you will end up in Sebring, and then, of course, you can ask for directions, because it's probably listed on a signpost, because it is a state park. But it's a wonderful illustration of early Florida before all the development.
What is the name of that state park again?
Highlands, H-I-G-H-L-A-N-D-S dash Hummock, H-U-M-M-O-C-K, Hummock meaning a small hill.
Oh, that's great. I'll actually have to call my mom after the show because she and my father have retired just outside of Sebring.
Yeah, and they grow wild orange trees in there from, you know, they're really old. And when you leave, you can stop at the little refreshment counter and have a wild orange milkshake.
Oh, wow.
Oh, that sounds great.
That sounds really charming.
And can I add one more thing?
Yeah.
If you want to travel to Nicaragua, a great group to go with is the Wisconsin Coordinating Council on Nicaragua. They go down twice a year, once in January and once in June, to keep track of their financial microfinance places down there. But anybody can go along. It's a small group, and you really meet the people.
That sounds fantastic.
Well, thank you so much for that call, Marianne. And David Lytle, any parting thoughts about travel, encouragement, or prodding for the new year?
Yeah, never be afraid to try a new destination. And we're encouraging people who don't already have one, get a passport.
Get a passport.
Because you never know what opportunities might come your way, and you want to be able, you want to be prepared to take advantage of those opportunities.
Good advice. Well, I wish you happy travels in the new year, and
thank you
so much for joining us this
thank
hour.
You.
All right, we've been talking with David Lytle, who is editorial director of Fromers.com. I want to thank Keisha Mabra for on-air production and Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour. If you'd like a copy of this program, you can call the radio store at 1-800-747-7444. 1-800-747-7444 and ask for program number 1226. E. That's 1226E. Jim Packard is in for Larry Mueller coming up next, and we'll be talking about all things Mac with a Mac support professional. I'm Veronica Rickert, sitting in this hour for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.